hey, hey, I'm your host, the Dr. Danko, come on in. You've been missing out, so let's begin. Oh, Pumpkin underscore Crumb is your host here too. When you hear the beat, you know what to do. Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me now? Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me? Hey.
Good evening and welcome to Why Did Not You Warn Me? I'm your host, Matthew, the Dr. Danko. Hey folks, so today's episode is going to be a little different than usual. Number one, you might notice that I am without my co-host today, and that's just because I've decided to record this in the middle of the day, so she is at work. I am also waiting to go to work in a little bit, so I decided, what the hell, I'll just record a new episode. You might have also noticed that we have not posted a new episode in quite a while. I can make a million excuses, so here we go. Number one, we were actually moving from the South Hills up into the North Hills, so that was a whole process. I'm pretty sure I had like my important equipment and shit packed way beforehand, so we hadn't done an episode in a while. We've had recorded like one or two episodes. I just haven't posted links or made them public yet, so that's on me. But then, you know, there was the process, because we were moving to a new location, about getting a new job. And since GoApe, the job that I have, is seasonal, I had to look for a different job. So now I'm working at an escape room called Breakout up in the North Hills. I was looking in the North Hills because that's where her job currently is, and GoApe is up in the North Hills when it is open, so I'll be working there next season. So it just made sense to look in that area and reduce that stupid commute that's like 2 hours in traffic, and it's just awful. But so I work at Breakout now, and all of the people I work with now know I have this podcast. So if for some reason you guys are listening, shout outs to you. Thank you for tuning in. This episode, though, is just going to be a little different. Like I said, since I am by myself, you know, we won't have that back and forth. But I was thinking of other things I could do to entertain you guys, rather than just go through the normal shit of what I watch and whatnot. And then when the people at Breakout found out I do have a podcast, I was reminded of an episode I did where I literally just played Lego Batman by myself and kind of did commentary on it, which was a whole lot of fun because I'm like a casual video gamer, so I don't really have that much experience with a lot of games. But I also just, it gives me something to do while I'm also rambling on for the 2 hours that this podcast is going to go on. And like I said, since I am going to work in a little bit, there at least is a time restriction, so I can kind of, you know, keep to that and not just ramble on for two pointless hours. Try to keep it short, maybe only an hour this time. So I'm going to be doing, you know, some commentary-ish on a few games. I decided to pop in Arkham Knight because it's been a while since I played. It's been a while. And I just have been playing Fallout Shelter like nonstop lately. So I'm going to get into that. And then since Hillary is not one for like horror movies or the stupid shit that I watch on most occasions, like normally when we talk about the movies and stuff that I've been watching, you know, since the format normally goes, she tells me what she's been reading, I tell her what I've been watching, and then we come together with something that we've both been experiencing. Like, we watched Into the Spider-Verse, which was amazing, but I can't talk about that without her. So sit tight and stay tuned for that episode, which will be forthcoming. But I've watched a few other things. I know earlier when we started this podcast, I was talking about, like, Scream the TV series, and I actually rewatched that recently because I needed something to watch for my downtime. And it's such a good garbage show that isn't really that garbage. So I mean, everyone experiences this. We binge through series and then when it runs out, we have nothing to watch, so we try to find something new, but more often than not, as the memes have said, as the memes declare it, you know, we just go back and rewatch episodes of The Office. Well, I was doing that before streaming them on The Office, not in a, like, I was doing it before it was cool type thing, but I had all of The Office episodes downloaded to my hard drive, and I would literally just queue up all the episodes, run them on a loop, shut off my TV like it was a cable thing since I had it hooked up to my computer, and that's what I would do. I would rewatch episodes of The Office. But you get to a point, you know, I will rewatch the same shit over and over again until I'm sick of it. And so that's kind of what happened. I got sick, not got sick, because I still do have like a very special place in my heart for The Office, but I just got, you know, I was tired. I wanted something new to experience. So like I would put on, you know, Red Dwarf, which is a British sci-fi show that maybe me and the creators are the only people that watch it. Peep Show, which is, it sounds dirty, but it's actually another British show. Blackadder, the Rowan Atkins show, another British show. And it's not just that I watch British shit, but like, what other, Parks and Rec. So rewatching Parks and Rec over and over again until you just don't, like, you know them off by heart. You don't really need to be paying attention to know the storylines or the dialogue or anything like that. And then the whole thing with Aziz Ansari, you know, made that weird to watch, so I had to stop watching it for a little bit. Like, I'm going to pick it back up soon. But it's a Michael Schur creation, and much like The Office, it's very much, you know, it. We've talked about the Schurniverse, how it's evolving television, so on and so forth. So, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is another show that Hillary and I, we binge watch and just have it on in the background when we're not currently watching like a new series like iZombie or The 100, which are just two examples of shows that we have to get back into, because right now we're actually rewatching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And since, you know, the first time I watched Buffy, I didn't watch it all the way through, and I would jump around because it was on television or I was watching reruns like back in the early 2000s. And then the first time I watched it all the way through was with Hillary. And now, like, we were looking for something to watch, and there's Marvel's The Runaways, which I do want to watch, she wants to watch, but we're just like, you know, that's a lot to commit to. So I was like, I'm kind of in the mood for Buffy. So we're like currently together rewatching Buffy. And anytime we don't have like a 45-minute window, say like we have to go to the store or like it's just before bed, like we're going to go to bed at 10 o'clock and it's already 9:30. Like, we won't watch a Buffy episode because that'll take us past our limit. So we'll put on Brooklyn Nine-Nine instead because it's shorter episodes. Or The Good Place is another one that we're currently watching. We haven't really done the rewatch yet. We did it to catch up with the newer season and whatnot, but it's not one of those shows that made it, that has made it into our cycle of shows that we rewatch. Gilmore Girls was also another one because, you know, she refers to it as the comfort food of television, and it's the same thing. Like, that was her version of The Office, where she would like put on an episode when she didn't want to dive into anything too heavy or too mind-numbing, like with plot. And like the characters and just the atmosphere of the show makes you feel really good, so you don't have to like strain yourself too hard in any which way. It's just something you can watch and not think about it. And Gilmore Girls is a wonderful show for that. So I was going through that by myself because, like, I don't, even though we're in the middle of rewatching like Buffy or Brooklyn Nine-Nine, those are shows that we rewatch together. Whereas like Gilmore Girls, because it's more of her show, she can watch it on her own, and then like I'll jump in and out of it because I know the story well enough now that I can do that. So like anytime I'm not home and she's looking for something to watch, she can put on Gilmore Girls. Well, we were doing that for so long that we finished all the things that we were rewatching, so we were both looking for new shows to watch. And she landed on The OC because we had just finished Gilmore Girls. I feel like I'm saying that really weirdly. Gilmore Girls. Like, the syllables are so close together. Gilmore Girls is how it's coming out. but we had just finished that, And so she's like, I need something like really something I could just sink into. And, you know, I told her the OC is one of those trashy like CW shows, but more like a Dawson's Creek type thing. And she like fell in love with it because it's so dramatic and so over the top. And more often than not, I would get home and she'd be like 20 minutes from finishing an episode. So I'd be like, you know what, just let me just play it. I'm not going to make you stop the episode while I'm here. Just finish the episode so we can watch something else. And more often than not, I would get like not wrapped into it. Like I'm dying to know what happens, but it's one of those like car crashes type things where you just can't look away. And, you know, I'm sure some of you are familiar with the SNL skit with Andy Samberg, Bill Hader, and it was actually the episode Shia LaBeouf was hosting, so he's in the short too, but it's called Dear Sister. And Bill Hader is like writing this letter like to his sister and trying to explain this to Andy Samberg, who walks in, and then Andy Samberg like out of nowhere pulls a gun and shoots Bill Hader. And then after he fires the shot, the song Mucha Say, like this really dramatic song plays. And like when I saw that skit, I knew it was hilarious. I couldn't look away from it. And then come to find out it might have been weeks later, that was a parody of something that had happened on the OC, but like over the top. And then like I forgot about it for a while. And then I warned Hillary about it because she had never seen the OC and I didn't know when it was coming. But she finally watched the episode where it happens, and then I wanted to watch that scene, and it's just brilliant. Like, brilliant, dramatic, teen soap opera television. And the things that happen on that show are really ridiculous. So, she was watching the OC. I was looking for something else to watch in my spare time. So somehow I picked up Scream again, which I've watched, well, now, like, twice all the way through. And, like, the second time I was rewatching it, I tried watching season 2, didn't remember anything that happened, so I went back to rewatch season 1 and then, like, caught up and shit. But it's messy. But, like, Scream the TV series is so much better than people gave it credit for, and it's an MTV series, so you already think this is going to be trash. But, like, and it's not directly related to the Scream movies. So it's like similar folklore, whereas like there's a killer with a mask that's killing people and everybody's a suspect type thing. And then you have like, you know, the survivor girl and the boyfriend and the movie geek who knows all the rules to survive a horror movie and shit like that. But it's not, they don't use the ghost face mask, which was a bummer when I found out, but because they're using a different, like, legend, it makes sense. Like, they make it their own while using the same style. So, like, there's some sort of, so the town is Lakewood, not Woodsboro, but it's close enough, right? And then there's something like this guy, Brandon James, was responsible for killing somebody in, like, the 90s or probably the 80s at this point. And so the mother of the main character, like, lived through all the Brendan James shit. Brendan James would wear that mask and whatnot, and, like, that was her story. And then on, like, the anniversary of the Brendan James killings or whatever, shit starts happening again, and somebody's wearing the Brendan James mask, and, like, shit just goes crazy. So it's tied into like its own legend, but using the same sort of, you know, I don't even know. It's a reimagining sort of. But what I found out, like, so season 3 is going to happen at some point once it gets out of all this legal trouble that the show's rights are in, that they're going to bring back the Ghostface mask, bring an entirely different cast back, regardless of who survived seasons 1 and 2, and they're, like, rebooting the story in a sense, because they're tying it to Woodsboro, even though the show previous did not do that. Now they're bringing in a whole different cast. So we cast, even though season two kind of ends on a cliffhanger, like, I'm not sure I'm happy about it, but whatever. So I rewatched that. And then I was still, like, it took me no time at all to rewatch that series. And, like, I was actually watching it. I'd find myself, like, on my computer, dicking around, trying to, like, pop in and out of the story, but then I just got too wrapped up in the story that I actually, like, put my laptop away and started focusing on the story because it was just that good. And it's very teen drama-y. I mean, it's an MTV show, and these are all, like, unrealistically attractive teenagers that are, like, trying to survive high school while also survive the killer and put pieces together and all this other shit. So it's a whodunit element, which is very riveting. But I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. And now, after I finished that, I was like, what other shows are on my list that I have yet to watch? And the show Future Man on Hulu just came into my radar not too long ago. And I was like, you know what? Let me give this a try. And holy shit. So Future Man, if you've seen any of the trailers, probably already understand what it's about. But Future Man, so Josh Hutcherson, still don't know how to pronounce it, but PETA from The Hunger Games, he's the main character. His name's Josh, go figure, in this show. He's a janitor at this, like, science company, and he is still living with his parents, blah blah blah, but he loves playing this video game called Biotic Wars. And he's playing it, he can't get past this one level, and then one night it just clicks for him and he beats the game, and nobody has ever beat the game before. It's like impossible to beat, which is why he plays it. And so he beats the game, and then there's flashes of light all around his room, and then these two, like, soldiers appear right in front of him. And they tell him that this game was a training simulation sent back in time to find the true savior of the human race. And they're fighters for the resistance. And he's like, so that, yeah, that's just the Last Starfighter. That's the exact same plot of that movie and all this other shit. So he is now, like, the chosen one that's going to help save the human race through time travel and other shit. And he's just this janitor that, like, played a video game. So if that alone can get you interested in the show, I would watch it, because there's a lot of time travel, a lot of science fiction shit, and a lot of references to all of those things. However, if you've seen the trailers or have just looked it up online, you'll notice that Seth Rogen's name is attached to it. Now, Seth Rogen wanted to, like, remake or reboot the Starfighter movie series, but the guy that made that movie or wrote it doesn't want to give out the rights because that's his project, doesn't want anyone fucking it up. So they tangentially, like, made something similar but different enough that, like, it's their own thing. However, if you're familiar with Seth Rogen's work, it's, you know, it says, like, from the producers of This Is the End or The Pineapple Express or The Interview, you know, the one with, why can't I think of his name? It's always Seth Rogen and James Franco. That's it. So James Franco, they interview Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il, The Interview, that, like, that whole movie. So this humor that they have is very, like, over the top, like, dick jokes and things like that, and crude humor and all that. So there is a good portion of that in the show. However, if you can get through all that, the show does have some decent plots. It is fucking funny, like, when they're not making dick jokes. And, like, there's a lot of heart in the show. Like, once they put down the jokes, even when they're making some of the jokes, they sneak some emotion in there, and because I cry at everything, you know, it teared me up. It didn't actually bring me to tears, but it was pretty close to doing so in some places. So that's what I've been watching. I will probably talk about it on the next episode of this show in more detail, to try to, you know, explain to Hillary, who just thinks it's a garbage show. And I get that. In the beginning, I thought it was garbage too. until like halfway through season one, it really hit its stride. Also, the guy, so there's the two soldiers that come back in time, Tiger and Wolf. Unfortunately, I didn't look up their names for this podcast, and my phone is plugged into the wall. But the guy that plays Wolf is fucking genius. He goes through so many changes throughout the show, like, because he's like a soldier out of time and shit like that, that it's just, it's brilliant. And Haley Joel Osment is in the show. He is phenomenal. And Josh Hutcherson, the guy who plays PETA from The Hunger Games, and what I knew him from initially was Zathura, the sort of tangential sequel to Jumanji, the board game that makes shit happen in your real life. They made like an outer space version of that, and he was the little kid in that movie. So that's what I knew him from. But he is phenomenal in it as well, and it's just a fantastic show. So I suggest anybody who is into sci-fi or anything like that, like I said, I just to warn you, there are a lot of dick jokes, but if you can get past all that, and I'm not putting down dick jokes. I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith, and he has, you know, built a career on dick jokes. I enjoy dick jokes as much as the next guy, but there's a way to do them. Some of them are pretty in your face, no pun intended. So there's that. But so now let's get to the real episode. I have about 30-ish minutes left. I'm going to start up Fallout Shelter, just to, so you might hear some music in the background, and that's okay. They're not going to sue me if there's some of the music on my podcast, are they? I mean, they might, but anyway. So anybody who's a fan of the Fallout series, or even if you're not, there's this game called Fallout Shelter. Now, if you're a fan of the Sims games, it's very similar to that, no pun intended, but it's more like Sims City Builder, if you've ever played that, where you're building these, basically, so in the Fallout series, it takes place like in the future, but the world has succumbed to nuclear tragedy, we'll call it, and most of the human race has taken shelter inside these Fallout shelters, as it were, under the ground. And so in this game, you are building those vaults so that people that, you know, that have been out in the wasteland have a place to survive. And so your main goal, you have to like build rooms that supply electricity, that supply food, and that supply water. And your job is to keep it sustaining itself. And so like you have people that are excelling in certain areas like intelligence, like all the special things like strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck. And then once they are excelling in one of those areas, they are more equipped to produce, you know, like I said, the electricity, the food, the water for your entire vault. And so like you have to keep everyone happy, you have to keep people working, production up, and things like that. It sounds probably way boring than it actually plays, but it is a whole hell of a lot of fun to like level people up and, you know, keep your vault going. I don't know if they fixed this, so I probably have talked about it elsewhere, like on the Guys Talking About Shit podcast, the GTAS podcast as it is now, but I think back then it was just the Guys Talking About Shit podcast, or even on an earlier episode of this show, Why Did Not You Warn Me? I don't think I was playing it when the Matthew Danko podcast was still around, don't call it then. So I had a huge problem with the Fallout Shelter game because I didn't know there was a cap for how many people you could have. So, like, you have all this space that they give you to build, but it is a limited space. Like, you can't just build on forever within the space that's provided. So you fill up all the space that you have with building, and then I figured, well, I need to get people into this fallout shelter. So, you know, you can set up a radio place with people that are excelling in charisma. They can, like, send out communication out into the wasteland and sort of let people know that there's shelter here for them so that they can come and become part of your vault and all that shit. In the future, in the show Future Man, they'd call it the NAG, the New Above Ground Shelter. But anyway, it's just a side note. So yeah, I didn't know there was a limit to how many people you can have, and I maxed out at 200 people. 200 people in this size vault seemed doable. However, another way that you can make people, you know, that you can recruit people for your vault is to have two people go into one of the living quarters that have similar stats in charisma, or like that can hit it off with their personalities, and make a child. Now, when you do that, the child doesn't just pop out instantly. There is a gestation period. Gestation period? Wow. But so I had done that, and I accidentally maxed out at 200. So nine or more women were just perpetually pregnant, which is a mouthful. But I could not give birth to them, even though they were all ready to be birthed, because I had too many people in my vault. And the only way to eliminate people from your vault is for A, if they die, which, you know, if you are doing everything right and, you know, sustaining people through the vault system with the water and the food and the electricity, and like, are you're protecting them from the outside forces such as like feral ghouls and death claws, you know, they can die. But the other way is to evict them into the wasteland. Now that is an option that can't be undone. So people that you've made, that you've leveled up and shit like that, or that you've just, you know, they're part of your vault, so they're sort of a part of your family, you have to send them out into the wasteland, and I don't think you get to equip them with anything. I think you strip them of all of their shit and just kick them out. And I didn't have the heart to do that, but I also had these women that were just perpetually pregnant, so I had quite a pickle on my hands, and I just stopped playing the game. I deleted it from my phone and just never wanted to open that vault again. So for all I know, they're still out there in cyberspace, just, you know, they're probably all dead, honestly. And I don't know why that is easier for me to deal with than, you know, nine women that are pregnant and the option of kicking people out of my vault so that these women can stop being pregnant and then just never let them be in a living quarter together so that it doesn't happen again. Beats me, but I'd rather the whole vault just be blown up by a nuclear bomb. So, on that cheery note, this vault is doing pretty good right now. I was just, you know, leveling some shit up. I have people out on a quest so that they can get me some more shit. And it was cool because over the Christmas holidays, they alter their sort of the themes for some of the rooms to match whatever holiday it is. And so some of my people are still dressed in their, you know, elf costume or Santa Claus outfits, which is kind of cool. I don't know why they make it so that you can't still have places decorated for Christmas, but that's another thing altogether. Unfortunately, my people that are out on the quest haven't reached their destination yet, so I can't play that and talk through it. So after I just do one more thing, check on one more person out there in the wasteland, I'm just gonna save this, and then we're gonna go over to the Arkham Knight game. One of the episodes, like I said, on the Matthew Danko podcast that I did, it was commentary on me playing Lego Batman, and I had a blast doing that. I mean, it was, the Lego Batman games are my favorite Lego games. Harry Potter I'm still partial to, but I don't know. They're just, the Jurassic Park Lego games are where it's at because, and this is the key difference, so the whole thing I loved about Lego games is their ability to storytell without dialogue, and for a long time they would stick with that. None of their characters would talk, all the gags would be visual, things like that, and still follow the general storyline of whatever property it was parodying or telling, the Star Wars franchise or Indiana Jones. But for some sort of, or for some of the more, you know, intense things, like, well, I'm not sure how they handled Nazis in the Lego Indiana Jones, but in Jurassic Park, instead of like these vicious, like, dinosaur eating dinosaur scenes that are in the movies, they sort of mimic that by, you know, making the dinosaur eat like a roasted turkey or something like that. Something that still gets the same info across, but isn't as graphic. Now, that being said, the things that the Jurassic Park games did even better than any of the other games is, so you have a property, you're dealing with Jurassic Park, Jurassic Parks 1, 2, 3, and then Jurassic World. Well, because they're all movies, the creators of that game decided, we're going to take audio clips from those movies and just insert them into these Lego games. So we're still telling the same story, the same linear way, but we get sound clips to make it feel a little more like the movies, and that just blew it out of the park. So, like, you have the Jurassic Park theme, you have Alan Grant, Jeff Goldblum just fucking doing his dinosaur weird laugh that he does on the helicopter. It's like a joke in the game, which is awesome. So I absolutely love the Jurassic Park Lego games. And the Lego Batman games took my favorite character probably of all time, Batman, and turned him into Lego form. So there was a lot more shit that could be done. And I think when I played that Lego game, that was the first Lego game I had played. So it was definitely a good game for me to play. However, then they came out with Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham, and that takes you to outer space and other shit. But the real draw for that game is you can unlock certain characters, and they were real people that were made characters in the game, like Conan O'Brien, or I believe Geoff Johns, one of the head editors of DC, were made into characters. Adam West was made into a character that you could unlock and play. But the biggest and most wonderful character was Kevin Smith. Because Kevin Smith is not only a huge geek by nature, he is very heavily involved with some of DC's like storylines and shit like that. He's written for Batman, for Green Arrow. He's also done a lot of Marvel shit as well. And that was super cool that they decided to make him a part of the game, because there is no more deserving guy other than like Stan Lee being a character, but you know, I don't want to make myself sad right before I have to go to work. So now I've loaded up Arkham Knight, one of the best Batman games in my opinion. Like, so you have this Arkham series, Arkham Asylum. There hadn't been really anything like it before. I mean, obviously there's open world shit, but there hasn't been a Batman game quite like it before that has existed, and it blew it out of the park. Like, from minute one, you have the Joker who somehow makes it super easy to capture himself, and you find out that's his whole fucking plan to get sent to Arkham Asylum, and it just to fuck shit up. And so, like, if you've ever read, you know, House on Serious Earth, the Arkham Asylum storyline, it parallels that pretty nicely. But it's like everything, like Batman being a detective and a lot of shit that's left out of the movies that we all love to hate, and not in a cool way. I'm a huge Batman fan, and the movies just haven't really done them justice for me. I will stand and defend that Ben Affleck is one of my favorites, if not my absolute favorite Batman that exists, because his version of Batman from Batman v Superman and also the Justice League movie, it is one of the closest interpretations of Batman that's ever been on the big screen. And I haven't seen the Teen Titans, like, the season finale of Teen Titans, where Batman apparently shows up. It's not a spoiler, it was in all the promos and shit. But like, I get a little more sense that this fucker is Batman, because Ben Affleck, and I know it's not, like, it could be anybody in the cowl, and for most of the movie, it's probably his stunt double. But, like, when Batman busts into the warehouse in Batman v Superman and is fighting these, like, henchmen, like, taking them out one by one so fluidly that, like, that's what the fighting style in the Arkham Asylum game was, where you would just go from henchman to henchman, picking things off of your utility belt and using them to whoop ass. Like, that's what Batman is. He's a fighter, he's intelligent, he's a detective, he is, I mean, he's fucking Batman. There's really, I can't describe him any better than that, because Batman is so, you know, so, I was going to say diverse, but that sounds wrong, because he is a rich white dude, but, like, he has so many skills, and he's so gifted, and he's trained himself this way. Like, he didn't just come out of the womb like this. He went around the world to learn all of these skills from all of these, like, masters of their craft, and did that until he felt ready to go back to Gotham City, the city that's taken his family, and, you know, make sure that, you know, there isn't another little boy that's walking down the street with his parents that loses them to some crime that happens, and then just disappears into the system of the corrupt system that is Gotham City. And I know Hillary, like, hates Batman with a passion. I understand why she does, but she also thinks that, like, you can use real-world solutions to solve the problems of Gotham City, and you just can't, first of all. And I wish she were here right now because of this connection that I'm making. So she really loved the Into the Spider-Verse movie, and I really did as well. Like, I've only seen it one time, so I'll have to rewatch it again, but there's very little wrong with that movie. Now, in spoilers if you haven't seen it, but in one particular scene where the Chris Pine Spider-Man is talking to Miles Morales, and he's like, promise me you can do this, because I can't, like, this is it. You have to put on the mask. You have to put on the mask. You can't trust anybody. You don't know. He's got everyone in his pockets talking about Kingpin being, like, so involved with, like, the cops of New York and all this other shit that, like, you can't trust anybody, and there's that paranoia to it. Well, that's what Gotham City is. Everyone is connected with these that have deep pockets, and, like, Bruce Wayne, who is a billionaire, could probably throw some money somebody's way and fix shit that way, but at the same time, like, the whole reason, like, Jim Gordon, the commissioner of the Gotham City Police Department, like, he doesn't necessarily agree with Batman 100% of the time. He was super skeptical of him. He just thought Batman was another criminal, just some freak in a mask sort of thing. But over time, he realized that this city, this can't be fixed the normal way. You can't do everything by the book, because nothing about Gotham City is by the book. Like, from the politicians to, like, the hospitals to, you know, I mean, obviously there are a ton of supervillains that exist in this world, but, like, everyone, like, almost nobody can be trusted, which is why Batman, who is this, just to Jim Gordon, he's just this guy that puts on the suit that decides to fight crime, but it's the only way crime can be fought in Gotham City. And I know Hillary thinks that's absurd, like, that's ridiculous, and that's not a solution, that she's called Batman because of Tumblr, like, some furry, I can't remember the phraseology, but, like, I get it, a dude that dresses up like a bat. It doesn't seem logical, but nothing about Gotham City is logical, and nothing about Gotham City can be fixed in the normal way, which is why it takes a man who's dressed as a bat to take down the criminals of Gotham City. I mean, you have criminals that are, try explaining this to her, but you have criminals that are, like, you know, in these sub-zero suits that are shooting ice guns, and you have a guy who dresses up as a clown just because it's funny to him, and you have, you know, this other, like, respectably rich dude that also has people in his pocket, like, that goes by the name Penguin because he's short in stature and kind of looks like a penguin. Not Danny DeVito, like, deformity shit, but, you know, like, there are villains that just don't make sense in the real world, so why you could attribute real world solutions to this fictional world, not just because it's a comic book, but because the rules of this world don't exist. Like, they're not real. Nobody could do the things that Batman does, because Batman is the only one that can do the things that Batman does. So you can't argue about it. She can, and she will, but I'm just saying. So, like, the things that I love about Batman, the fact that he is so good at his craft of being a bat and whatnot, but, like, really that he is so good at so many things. Like, I remember reading once that Batman was taking, he was, like, doing recon on a building that had a bunch of henchmen in it, and, you know, because the reason he dresses up as a bat is it's because, you know, partially because of something that he's afraid of, and he's supposed to be the thing that criminals are afraid of. That's awesome, first off. So he does recon on this building, sees a bunch of henchmen, how they're making their rounds and shit. And because he's so stealth-like and so quick and can move with such silence and grace, he takes a clip out of a henchman's gun, takes out the bullets, puts blanks in that clip, puts it back into the guy's gun, and then waits a little bit, and then shows up in front of him, because the guy, the henchman that he's just done this to, is going to start firing his gun. And when none of his bullets are taking down Batman, it only increases that fear. It makes it so much scarier that you're shooting at this guy and he is not flinching, he is not wavering, he is still just coming at you so that he can go and, like, maybe you take him down. Like, Batman doesn't kill people. He has, but we're not going to get into that. So maybe he runs off into the building and it's like, I tried shooting this guy and I couldn't take him down. But Batman's now in his head and he can knock him out, and maybe then that criminal goes on later because he's a small fish in this huge pond that Batman's trying to get. And he goes off and tells all the other henchmen, like, hey, this Batman guy, he can't die. I shot him and he wouldn't die. Like, shit like that. Increasing that fear so that Batman can operate more efficiently is just so fascinating to me. And it's just one of the many, many reasons I love the character. And I remember I was talking about Arkham Asylum because I'm playing Arkham Knight. Like, Arkham Asylum gave you, like, tastes of all that shit. Granted, you can't do absolutely anything in those games, but Arkham Asylum set the way. It delivered a great story, letting you play as a great character, and was very unapologetic in that fact. Like, it made me feel like Batman, and then they only got better. Like, Arkham City, you make it a little more open world, where you're in Gotham City, but the, you know, sectioned off part of Gotham City that's now like a prison, so it's a prison island. And so you're fucking around, you see Crime Alley and like the abandoned Ferris wheel and shit like that, but then you're dealing with like fucking Riddler, who's in your ear all the goddamn time as you're solving riddles as you're solving Riddlers, as you're solving riddles, and you have way more other, you have so much other shit to do, because, like, there's this whole plot about, like, Titan, this drug that's gonna buff you out that made Joker go in, like, super monster crazy in the Arkham Asylum and all this other shit. Like, you have real shit to deal with, and then, just like the real Batman, you have tiny shit to deal with, like fucking Edward Nigma, who just draws a fucking question mark somewhere and you're supposed to solve a riddle. And so that whole thing keeps going and going. And so you get to Arkham Origins, which, like, turns back the dial. So you're Batman, but, like, Batman on his first Christmas. And you're in a well-constructed Gotham City. Like, shit hasn't really gone wrong yet, but shit's starting to go wrong. And you have a hit out on your head, and there are like, I want to say there were 8 like hitmen, villains that you get to battle while you're in the Gotham that we know in Arkham Origins. And then you have this new villain, the Joker, that like makes his first appearance, and it's like, this is what starts it all, and it's just fucking fascinating. And then you get to Arkham Knight, and it's like the end of the line sort of thing, where you're in Gotham City and Batman is doing the things that Batman has always done to protect the city, and it's just one more thing on top of the other. And spoilers if you haven't played Arkham Knight, but like, the Arkham Knight himself is the villain, and you get to the point, like, there's drugs and shit that's in your system that's making you hallucinate, more or less. I'm pretty sure there's a toxin that's going around because of Scarecrow. And you're hallucinating things, and it's putting together, like, all of your guilt and shit from the past, which brings upon the memories of Jason Todd, the Robin that you weren't fast enough to save, and Joker, who has always sort of been your equal in terms of, like, not obviously in... He's been your match because he's, as crazy as he is only, like, one step away. Like, Batman himself is only one step away from being behind the bars of Arkham Asylum himself. And when Joker dies, a part of Batman dies also. So throughout this game, he also hallucinates the Joker. And, like, these two stories are diverging one on top of the other until finally, like, you... Spoilers again, but you find out that Jason Todd is actually the Arkham Knight. And then there's this whole other plot about, you know... Like, yes, you've done wrong with Jason Todd, made him into this, like, ultimate killing machine, well, ultimate fighter and assassin like yourself, and he just resents you because you weren't there for him. The Joker turned him against you, and then all that goes aside, because I think that story ends before the main story ends of what you're doing, and... You have this whole thing go on in your memory where you're sort of playing as the Joker, but, like, Joker, who has always been a part of you inside, is being brought out by this toxin. And the only thing that you can do is put Joker back in his box and send him back to Arkham Asylum, the Arkham Asylum of your mind and all this shit. And when you get to the end of the game, like... It's revealed that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and you've done all you can for this city. And the only thing that you can do is stop being Batman. And it's just so phenomenally well told. I don't want to get into the details because you can kind of already hear it in my voice, but it's going to make me cry because it's so well done. And then, well, I can't spoil the ending of the game because I don't want to do that for anyone. If you want to just look it up on YouTube and watch the ending of the game, feel free. I'm not going to do it here, but it's just a phenomenal game. And in my opinion, like, yes, Arkham Asylum gave us these games and, like, set the path. But, like, Arkham Knight is one of my hands-down favorite games that's ever existed. And I think I can stop this here because I got to get going for work. But this has been awesome. I have been wanting to record for a little while. And like I said, we were so busy with moving and like the holidays and finding jobs and things like that. So I'm glad that we're now in one spot in an apartment that we really like because our last apartment was shit. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, on the next episode, because Hillary and I have a story to tell about our last apartment. But thank you for listening. Thanks to any new listeners that I've gained. You've all been great. And I have been Matthew the Dr. Danko. The Dr. Danko is my handle for most shit, so you can find me on, like, Twitter or Instagram. I do a lot of other shit on there, mostly. So thank you for listening. Good luck, and good night.
Once the show ends, please don't shed those tears. We'll come back again, so have no fear. We told you that it just might end up this way. What's the show called again? You cannot be saying, why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me now?